Welcome, everyone, and thank you for coming this morning. Just in a few more weeks, we will be upstairs permanently, no longer relegated to the downstairs. So it's something to look forward to. Actually, as we speak, the floors have all been done. They look quite beautiful, and they are curing. Is there anybody who is first time here today? Oh, okay. Good. So just to kind of bring you up to date, since the end of September, beginning of October, our community is involved in the broadest sense with what we call a path of awakening. We have different ones over the years, and this one is called mastering the fundamentals, the basics of our tradition and our practice in our community. And for the first 3 months, we are practicing and reviewing the teachings fundamental to mindful living. And the talks that have been going on every week in the local sanghas have been geared toward mindful living. We just had a retreat called Becoming Intimate with Life, looking at these fundamental teachings that the Buddha gave 2,600 years ago in called the Four Foundations of Mindfulness Sutra, which the teachings that are known as mindfulness all come from. We have an intensive practice involving over 80 people. I think it's called Practicing or Living from the Inside Out. Get all these different titles confused, but all gearing toward the same thing for these first 3 months, which is the practice of mindfulness. And what we've done this morning, that we've all participated in, the sitting, being in the body, awareness of the breath. When we are sitting, when we are standing, and when we are moving about, this is a very fundamental and most important first step in mindfulness. Again, the talks at the retreat and previous talks are all available through our website. As well as there are all kinds of books and all that, and mindfulness is very popular. So we won't spend a lot of time this morning in going over theoretical ground. Certainly there's a lot available for people who are interested. But I wanted to review a couple of things this morning, and then really, since I think Diane has been giving talks here for the past month, kind of hear from people about their practice of mindfulness and how it really relates to their own healing and transformation, and really learning to live a good life, which I think is what we all want to do. It was interesting, we just had a four-day retreat here at the Franciscan Center here in town on the Satipatthana Sutra and the fundamental practices of mindfulness as taught by the Buddha. And you know, the first one is mindfulness of the body breath. The second establishment of mindfulness is what's called feelings or vedana, which I'll go into today a little bit. And then the third one is the realm of the mind, emotions and thoughts. And there was this energy in the retreat because people wanted to get right into their stuff. You know, that's where we're focused. You know, how can I work with these negative mind states and these emotions and all the things that upset me or disturb me or worry me, or you know, and all the people that drive me crazy? I mean, you know, right? We want case by case solutions. But most of us have been working with case by case solution for decades. And you might have noticed that the cases never end. And as soon as you've gotten relief from one case, others will quickly take their place. So to have a deeper kind of practice that really offers us some capacity of real meaningful change in our life, we have to kind of step back and cultivate a foundation for our life that is solid, that is ongoing, and that will give us the capacity when we enter the realm of feelings and emotions and issues and all that stuff, that we have some kind of basis for dealing in a coherent and effective way with that which causes us the most difficulty in our life. The reason people struggle year after year, decade after decade, is because they don't have that. We don't have that. So it is good to, for some reason, I just thought of the three little pigs. You remember the one who built the house made of straw? What was the other one? Branches or twigs or something? Twigs. And, you know, then there was the one who built the solid house of brick. So it's like that. If we build our mindfulness practice, if we build our meditative spiritual practice, if we built our life out of straw or twigs, the winds of our issues, the winds of emotionality, the winds of our conditioning will blow us away. We will not find that that gives us great shelter and stability. So it is, I've never really thought of the three pigs before, but it is actually quite profound now that I think about it. We want to build our shelter. We want to build our home. This is our home. Our body, mind is our home. As human beings, this is where we dwell. This is our fundamental home. And if our body and mind are not good, we will not be good. Right? Unfortunately, we live in a society where we think our home is the external world. Right? Our home is the way things look. The home is the way people think about us or perceive us. This is the home that many people are very carefully crafting, right? And they think when they get it right, then everything will be good. But that's there's no well-being or peace of mind or goodness in that kind of home, right? I think we all know that to some degree or another. So we need to return home. Home means come back to our body and mind and build a foundation there that is strong. Right. So we begin going back to the Buddha 2,600 years ago. His first teaching was mindfulness of the body. Right. The body is always in the present. The body is nowhere else but in this moment. And when you see, and the eyes are part of the body, when the body sees, whatever it sees is what is happening right now, right? Whatever sound you hear is whatever sound is happening right now. Smelling, tasting, feeling. Is that clear? So learning to be in the body gives you a ground and an entryway into the present, which is uncontaminated by conditioning, by thoughts, but we'll get into all that. Is that clear? It is probably, in a certain way, the purest aspect of our existence, if we can experience it purely. But again, because most of us have lost contact with our bodies, are not comfortable in our bodies, and are not living through seeing, hearing, and touching, you know, we're living through thought and conditioning, we have to come back to our body. And body, mindfulness of the body, is the simplest kind of mindfulness, right? I mean, I can be aware of the way this feels in my hand, right? I can be aware of its solidity. I can be aware of its coolness. I can be aware that there's a little bit of surface texture. I can be aware of how it looks, of its shape. I can feel its shape, and I can see its shape, and I can see its colors. Can you see in the all the way through? So it's very easy for me to attend to that if I attend to it. Right? It grounds me right away. It's an entryway into the present. So that is why we begin, you know, with this very simple practice. Right? Can I learn just to sit and be in my body? Right? Can I learn to stand? Can I learn to walk about and be in my body and know I'm in my body? Right? That's very stabilizing and grounding and calming, and gives us another place to dwell other than lost in conceptualization and our issues and our dramas and our melodramas, right? Or else to constantly have to throw ourselves into all kinds of stimulation and activities. I can go the other way. I can come home. Breathing in, I'm aware of my body. I'm aware of my breathing. I'm aware that I'm seeing, right? Even if you're lost, just go, breathing in, I'm aware that I see a flower. And then just to stop and see the flower. How many of us stop and see the flowers? Really? Much less smell the flowers, right? So is that clear? I mean, this is why we begin with mindfulness of the breath, mindfulness of the body, and learning with our senses. That's why in Zen, you often hear, you know, just look, just smell, just taste, just touch, just. The accent is on the word just. Right? Very simple. Children and infants do this naturally. We all did this naturally. We didn't have to, you know, come on Sundays to special kinds of things and take special kinds of postures, and right? It was all very simple. But in our growing up, so to speak, in our growing up, we grew away from this basic capacity. So we have to cultivate, we have to practice, so we can come back to it. Is that clear? So this is the importance of this fundamental mindfulness that begins with establishing a mindfulness practice of sitting, walking, and standing, and it moves into just being present to all the things you're doing. You know, when you're drinking a cup of tea, you're drinking a cup of tea. When you're talking to somebody on the phone, you're present to talking to them on the phone. When you're eating, you can taste the food. When you're brushing your teeth, you know you're brushing your teeth. That's what this is all about. I'm coming home. To where my life really is. Where is my life? In the present. What's going on? Whatever is going on is my present. Is that clear? Mindfulness doesn't pick or choose. Right? Mindfulness doesn't care what kind of toothbrush you're using or what kind of toothpaste. It is just present. Mindfulness of seeing can look at any flower there is, or a weed, so to speak. Right? So the wonderful thing about the practice of mindfulness, both as a meditative practice and as a daily life practice, is it's totally open to what's ever happening. You can practice it at work, you can practice it at home, you can practice it at the meditation center, you can practice it at Publix, at Walgreens, you know. Right? You can practice it with everybody and anything, you can practice it with good weather and not so good weather, right? Is that clear? That is why it is such a wonderful, fundamental practice. mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the breath, which includes mindfulness of the senses. The sensory organs are all located in the body. Any questions about this? I mean, anything not clear? Please don't hesitate to, if anything is confusing or you don't. You sure?
Sometimes my mental activities affect my physical.
Okay, let's not. Okay, let's not go there. There. Okay. See? We just want to get into our minds, don't we? Yeah, I know that. But we're going slowly. Okay. All right. We want the house. Do you remember the three little pigs? Wasn't there a wolf? Yeah, that's what that was all about. Now I remember. Yeah, so what's the wolf here that's trying to get into the house? Yeah, there it is. That mind of ours. Thoughts, memories, perceptions. It's always trying to get into the house and what? What?
Shake it up.
Well, wolves are a little more, at least in the stories, they want to do more than just shake it up. They wanna eat the little pigs. Right? You know, our minds see our life as something that it's like a predator. It just can take it and use it any way it wants. And we don't know that. Well, if we know it, we don't know what to do about it. I think many of us know it because we go, gee, I wish I could just turn this mind off. Right? So we, in a certain level, we do know it is the source of many of our issues. Yes, so do you have a question?
So by becoming more mindful, we will become more alive, more peaceful, more what?
Yeah, all that over time.
Over time, so it takes a while to learn this.
Well, yeah, I mean, there will be some immediate benefits, but yeah, but it will, yes. I mean, why else do it? It's not just a lifestyle, right? It's a fundamental. I mean, the Buddha, this was his fun, you know, he taught many, many, many teachings, but this was like in terms of meditation and life, you know, these establishment oneself in mindfulness was considered basic. Yeah, you're right. Again, I would think, if you are upset, right, with any kind of emotional affliction, and you're able just to come back, right? I mean, even long before anybody knew about Buddhism or establishing mindfulness, people would say what? Take a deep breath. I mean, there was some acknowledgement that somehow coming back to your breath and being aware of it was calming, you know? Take three breaths, you know. Oh. Right? I mean, counting sheep. I mean, in Zen, they count their breath, you know. But somebody said, you know, just count sheep. Help you to calm down and help you to sleep. All right, so there is this first a foundation that we establish ourselves in mindfulness of the body breath. And to develop that capacity over time and to feel at home there takes time. But because our body is always with us, we don't have to go anywhere to do it. It's right here. Now the second, and again, at the retreat, the four-day retreat, it was just on, and in the intensive, there you will find a more traditional explanation of all this. So for those of you who are more, again, I think that's all on the website? Right, they're all posted. So this second level of experience is very key. And as I said, a retreat to many people, it is an aspect of it is the connector between body and mind that Western psychology has really paid no attention to. Okay, we often wonder, how did I, you know, people will say in terms of their mindset, how did I get here? You know, you'll find yourself in some kind of drama and some kind of emotion, and you'll go, how did I get here, right? I mean, I was just walking down the street, or I just, you know what I mean? I was just being with somebody, or I just was looking, you know, and I was really feeling okay. How did I get here, right? Well, this second establishment of mindfulness really tells us how we get here, and we get here so quickly, okay? It is not a mystery. Now, so this is, and again, it's subtle because we are so unaware of it. Those of you who are in the intensive and retreat, even though you've heard these teachings before, we can always hear it again. because they are subtle, because we are not mindful. And basically what this is, and it comes out of the body. So, the body, as remember we said, the body in a certain way has no mind, right? It just sees, smells, hears, tastes, senses, feels, right? You know, it just does all that, but it doesn't think about it. It doesn't have an opinion on it. It doesn't like or dislike. You know, what we call pain, which is for most people a negative, is simply what? Is simply a sensation in the body. That's all it is. I mean, all taste is just a sensation in the tongue, in the mouth. Right? Is that clear? So in the realm of the senses and the body, things are just sensations, we could say. Right? Now, this is the subtle piece. What meditators who very closely watched very minutely what was going on in their body and mind, and again, you know, they had lots of time, there was no TV, there was no internet, there was nobody calling them on the phone, you know what I mean? They lived very simply, and they lived away from human activity and devoted themselves single-mindedly just to watching and observing microscopically the activities of their body and mind. And what they noticed was that when the body or any of the senses made contact with an object, okay. So in other words, when I am looking at this flower, we would say my eye consciousness is making contact with this flower, right? This is what the eye in this moment is contacting. Is that clear? In the same way, if you're hearing words, we would say your ears are making contact with this sound. Is that clear? Or when I'm touching something, that's probably easier, right? My fingers are making contact with this. Okay? So what they're saying is that, now we'll just stay in the body, we won't go into the mind yet. But at least in the body, every sense is continually making contact with whatever in its field. And it's just going on all the time because we're seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, right? All that. Now, what they noticed was that almost at the same time, even though it actually was perhaps a millisecond or what afterwards, when there is contact, like in other words, and this is again, the language is a little different, my eye is making contact with the flower, at that moment of contact, there is either a positive, negative, or neutral feeling tone. Okay, if you read the translations, they often say feeling, right? And we think that means emotion because that's in our common language, feelings and emotions are sort of the same. This is not that. There is no emotional coloration, there's no thought involved. This is all pre that. Is that clear? There's no elaboration. It's quite simply pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. What that means, if it is pleasant, whatever that means, there is a movement towards, right? A willingness to remain, to keep looking. Okay? It's very simple. If it's a negative, there is aversion. There is a wanting to stop it, to get away from it. To just you know, I would just keep continue looking. It's not pleasant to look at, right? And then the if it's neither the pleasant or unpleasant, positive or negative, it is neutral, which means, you know, there's just no interest. There's nothing at all. Just keep. Is that clear? From that initial unconscious positive, negative, or neutral, that moving toward or moving away from or being neutral to or indifferent thought, emotion, movement is being instigated unconsciously. And we react unconsciously. I look at the flower. Immediately I have a negative. Right? And all of a sudden, you know, I don't even know it, but I have a negative. When you have a negative, what happens? You don't want to move toward it, right? I hate roses, actually. Especially roses like this. You know, they're, I mean, that's not the real color of a rose. Either these manufactured roses and they're hybrids, and, right? Where am I now? What? Negative. But now it's entered the realm of the mind, right? It is thoughts, it is feelings, I'm generating opinions, I'm right? I'm not aware that initially there was just that initial, right? Or I'll say, you know, I can't believe somebody gave me that rose. I mean, whoever did that must have terrible taste, or just at least not know. Or maybe they were trying to offend me. You know, they knew that I really hate these kind of roses and wanted to, right? We laugh, but we do this all the time, don't we? We make up stories. Right? Now, on the other hand, let's say I love roses, you know. So when the mind is moving toward in a positive way, it wants to engage, it wants it to continue. Right? You know, this is really a wonderful rose. You know, I'd really like to have more than one. You know, I wonder where I could get more of them. You know, right? So it goes. Now, this vedana, this feeling, is essential because, can you see, it is driving us. Let me explain why. In Buddhism, as for those of you who've learned anything about Buddhism, we know there are these kind of three primary ways that kind of drive us in life, right? One is in the realm of desire, wanting, needing, must have, grasping, clinging, attaching. You know what? Can you know that one? That is a very fundamental driver of our life, right? Moving toward that which we perceive as pleasant, right, and then moving our life in that direction. That is a major driver of human behavior. People who are who always want to have pleasant experiences or to have things that they think will give them pleasant experiences, therefore then spend a lot of time and energy trying to get and gain and have and control and manipulate all those things that they consider what? From the initial hit, positive, pleasant. If you do go down that road, there's one very big thing that stands in your way. You know what that is? The unpleasant. Right. If there's anything we want to avoid or get out of our life, is what? That which we perceive as unpleasant. Right. I always have to have flowers. Just being up here and not having flowers is an unpleasant experience. My life is being conditioned. So the person who is, and again, this begins to inform over time our personality. We become people who are always, our life is always about pleasure, pleasurable experiences, pleasurable people, pleasurable things, pleasant experiences, you know. And it sounds kind of nice, right? But what happens, it becomes driven. And there's a grasping, a clinging, and a must-have. And the other side of that is what? What's it like to be the person when I don't have all these things? Yeah. What's it feel like? What's really going on inside me? Why must I always have these things? Experiences, you know, why? Because maybe inside me there is unpleasantness. And I don't want to experience that. So there is a compulsive quality to it, and there is a unwillingness to be present to other things that maybe are going on inside us. And then anybody, you know, we are very conversant these days about things like dependencies, addictions, right? What's that about? What's addiction about? Always wanting what? Pleasure, right? I mean, most addicts are taking substances that they believe are giving them what? A positive experience, right? So addiction is just a pharmacological, you know, but we talk these days about food addiction, and we talk about, what else? We talk about sex addiction, and we talk about shopping addiction, right? So it's all the same thing. We perceive these experiences as pleasurable, and we develop this compulsive relationship to it. It all begins with what? Vedana. V-E-D-A-N-A is a Sanskrit word, Pali word, and it's this movement toward. And what's it like on this other side? Right? Where we don't want, we have negative responses to things, people, feelings, sensation, objects, when we make contact. Again, when we know we are in a negative vedana, there's a negative feeling tone, even unconsciously we're not aware of it, but what's driving us, we then want to what?
Step back, move away.
Yeah, we want to step back, we want to move away, we want to stop it, we want to fix it. We want to do anything but have to be present to it. Right. In the same way that there are people over time who get driven this way, there are people over time that get driven that way. These are the people who are who, when they perceive the world as being with lots of things, people, experiences that they don't want to experience, they say what? No. No. There are many people, their first response to anything is what?
No.
Right? No. And there's always resistance, there's always worry, anxiety, frustration. I mean, that's all part of this over time, this personality. Because the world is a place filled with things to avoid. Things that are, I don't want them. I don't want this to be happening. Right? It could be all kinds of things. People were involved in relationships, human beings, work, all kinds of things. Our first response is anything is what? No. You know people like that? Maybe some people like that. It's not even pre-thought. It's like whatever it is. No. And there's always a reason, a good reason that we generate for why we want to avoid. We don't want this to happen. Because I assure you, when you leave the world of Vedana and enter the world of the mind, whose mind? Our mind. You will find endless support for why you're doing what you're doing. Always. It's like, oh, of course there's a good reason to say no to this, or be cautious about this, or being afraid of this, or not wanting this. You know, and the mind will just, or to reject this person, or to think that they're bad and I'm good, or I'm right and they're wrong, or right? It's, the mind works full time to justify our delusion. Is that clear? So you have these two, and again, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of making cartoon characters, you know, kind of one dimensional. But I mean, many of us are mixtures. Okay, but also many of us may find that if we kind of really kind of look at it, yeah, this really characterizes me. So do you remember neutral? I mean, you know, the neutral is kind of interesting. It's sort of, it's like we're really not paying attention. Right? We're really not present. And so therefore our experiences of, as we go through our day, many people are just what? Kind of blah. Kind of bored. You know, kind of disinterested. It's where the primary modality is neutral. You know, it's kind of gray. And oftentimes there is, I think these days, because people are so distracted and so busy and with all their stuff, they are not very connected or interested in really what's unfolding right in front of them. And again, we know that many people have low thresholds of boredom. I was at the movies not too long ago, and it was fascinating to me. You know, movies are dark, right? But they're kind of a, they're kind of an experience, right? Going to the movies, I noticed that pretty much everybody, as they just stepped out of the, you know, it was one of these multiplex things. So you're really just stepping out into the hallway where all the, and people as they were stepping out, even before they were stepping out, people were doing what? Yeah, like a moment of not having something going on was perceived as some kind of what? Deprivation. It's kind of like boring. Right? So that we don't realize that constantly keeping ourselves busy, occupied, stimulated, is often because, and it's just cultivating this losing our capacity to be simply present, because even that which is perceived, people will say, but there's nothing going on, right? I mean, I'm just out here in the hallway, right? What's there to be present to, right? I'd much rather, you know, get some electronic information. But there is something going on, isn't there? You're going on. You're alive, you're breathing, there are people around. I mean, there is life. Always, but you have to touch it, you have to turn your mind to it. You have to turn your mindfulness in its direction. When you touch it, it becomes alive. But we are in a culture that's more and more training us not to be alive in any meaningful way. It's teaching us just to be stimulated. And stimulated may give us a sense that, you know, things are going on, but at the end of the day, I don't think it produces happiness, calmness, well-being of body and mind, does it? No. So this neutral is a very interesting thing too. because again, it can lead to this kind of disinterested, kind of disconnected kind of living where we are just uncomfortable. When quote unquote nothing's going on, it's like we're eternally teenagers, right? Right. I mean, my children were like, "There's nothing going on. I'm bored." You know, it's like, anyhow, there is a lot going on. You're just not noticing, or you're not valuing. So, this capacity in the second establishment of mindfulness, what's called Vedana, V-E-D-A-N-A, it's this positive negative feeling tone. It's important. This is the second one that the Buddha taught. It is the entranceway into the realm of the mind, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, but it is the connector. And that connector, of course, is conditioned, right? It is really where our conditioning has taken place. It's conditioned by our childhood, by our experiences, by, you know, right? I mean, why does somebody taste this and they go, "This is delicious," and somebody else tastes it and goes, "This is horrible"? I mean, the food is, it's the same food, right? You know, it's like when you're in retreat, you know, you have 40, 30, 40, 50 people in retreat, right? And they're all in the same room. And there's only one thermostat. Huh? It's just wonderful to watch, right? You know? Or like, you know, at the retreat, you know, there are these windows, you know. Somebody comes in, they open the window. 2 minutes later, somebody else comes in, they close the window. I mean, what? The temperature is still the same, isn't it? What's the difference? Vedana, this unconscious like, dislike, good, bad, pleasant, unpleasant. Right? And it's not in the thing itself. I mean, this flower, whether you like it or not, whether you find it pleasant or ugly, whether you're attracted to it or not, or indifferent, is the flower changing? It's the same flower. Right? You know, because I like this car and don't like that car, I'm attracted to this and not to that, this person, not that person. We think that our judgments of good and bad, desirable, undesirable, has some validity to it. It really doesn't. It's just our conditioning. Right? Now, understanding that is not just for psychological, upmanship. It's really because this endless movement is the cause of our afflictions, of our restlessness, of our unhappiness, of our mind that just endlessly fabricates, fabricates, fabricates. Now, I didn't get into, there is, and we'll just stop in a minute, you know, in this world of Vedana, of feeling tone, it also goes on in the mind. So the mind, which just means awareness in this sense, when it makes contact with a thought, a story, a feeling, a memory, it has immediate positive, negative, and neutral, right? There are some trains of thought that we what? That we love, you know, so we repeat it over and over again. We love it, right? There's some feeling states and I don't want to feel that. Right? Negative avoidance. Shut it off. Do something else. Right? And then just lots that we are neutral to. So this goes on everywhere. And it is important that we see it because it is conditioning us. And we don't even know it. It's turning us into people who always go this way and can't go that way. People always say, "Oh, I can't do that." You know, my response is, "Why can't you?" I mean, we can do anything, can't we? What holds us back? Our conditioning. And we think our conditioning is some kind of valid truth. but maybe you all disagree with what I'm saying. So we have a few minutes. Questions about how to practice this or what this means for life or...
I'm not sure what my question is, but is the conditioning... I see these spiritual political views, seemingly this polarization going on.
Right.
And that's mainly, I guess my question is, that's conditioning.
So the question is, our political views, and many of us believe that our political views are righteous, right? Righteous. Right? And the thing that's so frustrating to us is that there are all these other people with exactly the opposite views who think that theirs are totally righteous, right?
Right.
Is that true or not true?
Yes.
Right. I mean... You got a problem there, don't you?
Well, I don't.
Well, maybe you're neutral.
You're moderate.
Again, it is not like one cannot that in our social political world that we do not, we're not present to things that are going on, and that we do not generate what we think are solutions to them. I mean, I think that's something we do in our personal life and our family life and all that. But to think, I think the problem becomes is when we forget that we are just, these are just views. They are not truths, right? So if I said to you, Doug, would you like to go out and have Chinese food? And Doug says, what? I hate Chinese food, right? Let's go have pizza. I love pizza, right? Now, what's the truth in that? I mean, could 1 billion Chinese be all wrong? Right? I mean, oh... Right? But you know what? Traditionally, if you gave Chinese people a pizza, they would do what? They spit it out. Ugh. Right? But we know over time, pizza will make probably inroads in China. Right? The same way Chinese food is made inroads here. And we can learn, can't we? If we are not wedded to our beliefs. We think our taste buds are some kind of, our taste buds have been conditioned. You know, we grew up in certain families, we were given certain foods in our culture, and that is why certain things taste good to us. Right? But we all have the same mouth. We all have the capacity of taste. I mean, what conditioned us to like certain things and not other things? Our experience, that's all. So it's everywhere. When you understand that, you can say to me, when I say, would you like to go to Chinese food? You could say to me, you know, I really don't enjoy Chinese food that much. And then you could, you know, since we shared the same view, you could say, because of my conditioning, in parentheses. Right? But you may be willing to experiment, right? Or you may say, you know, this is just my conditioning. I'd rather go to here. Is that okay? But you see, it's in play. It's not truth. It's not something to split apart on. Right? We split apart, whether in relationships, families, because we think our Vedana is true. Right? It's not true. Everything is conditioned. That's hard for us to believe, right? You know Thich Nhat Hanh's famous poem, I am the... the poem is titled, Call Me By My True Name. You know, it's a very famous poem where he says, you know, I am the girl, the boat person, raped by the pirate. But he says, I am the pirate. Because if I had grown up in that village on the coast of Thailand, and this is what I'd grown up, I would be a pirate. Right? And when we understand that, we understand a deep truth about conditioning and life. You know, many of us have our political views, but where did we get our political views from? You know, we were conditioned. Some of us, our conditioning was here, and then we had other situations that conditioned us to change or something. But it's all, you know, many people haven't had that. So that's humbling to know, you know, if I was that person, you know, you pick your worst person, and you go, if I had grown up in their house, experienced everything they experienced, blah, 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 I'd be them. Right? I'd be them. I mean, that's very humbling, isn't it? But it's also true. So it doesn't mean that people who you think have views that are offensive or this or that, that you don't speak up. Do you see what I'm saying? But it's not with that self-righteousness. It's not with that sense, I'm good, they're bad. Because we understand that it's, you know, we're only going to get ourselves out of this mess if we what? Start reconditioning. Yes.
Question from Robert, who's live streaming today. He says, are we just supposed to be aware of the Vedana, just to note it, or go deeper and investigate it, why it's positive, negative, or neutral?
Well, again, so that's a good question. So again, this is a very deep practice of mind. The question is, so then what are you supposed to do when you begin to understand this conditioning that's very unconscious, giving us positive, negative? The first step is mindfulness of. I am aware, right? So I see somebody coming. Immediately what? Let's say I have a negative response before I even think anything. Anybody know, have those kind of experiences? Yeah. Now, why am I having that negative response? Because of my conditioning. Other experiences I've had with that person or those kinds of, you know, who knows, all kinds of stuff. But if I can hold it right there before it becomes an elaborated story and emotional and just feel that aversion, right? And just, you know, breathing in, I am aware of what's going on. And then you can do something different if you want. That's the freedom. You know, freedom in spiritual life means to be free of our conditioning. To begin to choose how we want to be in life, rather than to be unconscious slaves of endless reactivity. Which most of us are. It's hard for us to admit it. But most of us are just the slave of our causes and conditions, our past, and we're just acting it out all the time. Other questions? Yes.
Is in person of the face mind when they talk about...
Is it kind of warm in here, speaking of Vedana? See, like I'm having a... Does it feel warm? Maybe I'm drinking tea. How do people feel?
Yeah.
Just interesting. Comfortable. Now, so how many people are feeling when they sense how the temperature feels in here, it is pleasant, it is positive Vedana, and they'd like it to continue this way? How many people? Okay, good. Anybody, am I the only one who just had a little negative Vedana? I'd like not to continue to experience it. I'd like it to be a little cooler. There you go. Yeah.
I observe there's more than one thermostat, though.
Right. Things get elaborate very quickly. You know? Anybody neutral couldn't care less. I mean, they're indifferent. There you go. The truth is, you know, it is what it is, isn't it? Yeah. Yes.
In verse of the faith bond, when they talk about no preferences, is this what they're talking about?
Well, right, because in verses on the faith mind, which is a very famous Zen text written by the third patriarch of Zen, Chinese, of this famous line, you know, the great way is not difficult for those who do not pick and choose. When preferences are left aside, the way stands, etc. Right? Yeah. Again, obviously, in life, we have to make preferences. Do I go right? Do I go left? Right? Do I turn the AC on or off? right? So what are we cooking for dinner tonight? Right? You know, what am I putting in the salad? So obviously, every time we go shopping, we have to make choices, don't we? And our choices are conditioned by our preferences, right? Like the little I know about you. So if you went shopping for cereal in the morning, would you buy Choco, whatever they're called, those Dracula Choco Cocoa Puffs or something? You wouldn't, would you? You would avoid them like the plague, right? Yeah, negative Adana. But see, most people make a big deal about that stuff, don't they? It's like not making a big deal about it. It's like, when we go to the store, or we go up and down the aisles, we are choosing, aren't we? And there are some things we... And that's based just on our conditioning and how we, all that. And it's not a big deal. So many people, it's a big deal if they can't get their Cocoa Puffs for breakfast. Right? If the temperature is a little warmer than they want or cooler than they want. You watch people. Right? Temperature's not what I like it. They become miserable. Do you notice that? They can become miserable because things are not the way they want them to be. People become miserable because people aren't the way we want them to be. Situations aren't the way we want them to be. I'm not the way I want myself to be, right? Life becomes just a series of what? Afflictive melodramas. Driven by what? Unconscious Vedana. Everybody has a new word now. Please, over the coming days and weeks, just become mindful of Vedana in all your five senses and in your mind. Just watch it. See if it's there. The goal is, in Buddhist psychology, is a state that's called equanimity. Equanimity. Kind of being even. Because you catch it at that level of basic Vedana and you just hold it in mindfulness. We don't have to act and react. I mean, the vote on the temperature in here didn't go my way. Did you notice that? After 68 years, I've developed that level of maturity that I don't storm out in a huff. Right? I'm learning to be equanimous with my own negative Vedana. Right? And that's what we want. So we will stop here.